Hey, so you know how teenagers traditionally sleep in really late, but they stay up really late.
Yep, gotcha.
You know, older, you know, sleep till noon, but they're up like really late in the night. Older people tend to go to bed really early, but get up like pretty early. People in middle age keep more standard hours, but it kind of rotates.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to an evolutionary scale, like a tribal society, that system makes it to where somebody is always up to watch things around the campfire.
Okay.
Isn't that kind of neat?
Has a purpose.
Yeah. You think, oh, teenagers are just lazy, but it's actually, like, they've done studies. They're kind of wired to do that. You know, it's like not them being moody. And elderly people, it kind of, you fall into the rhythm of your age. And it actually kind of makes sense. You go back, it's like, yeah, somebody's always up and the rest of the tribe can sleep comfortably.
Did you make this up or did you?
No, I read that. That's okay. Real.
That's real.
That's real science.
Because sometimes I believe you're made up theories.
Yeah, or I have, it's a real theory, but I made it up. It's not... Doesn't make it less real just because I thought of it.
I think if a teenager is listening to this episode, I think you should use that immediately.
On your parents, yeah, like
on your parents, on your teachers, like, hey, this 8 o'clock class, I'm a junior, I can't handle it. I gotta watch the fire.
I'm like, that should be
your senior quote. Should I gotta watch the fire.
You're on the night's watch, basically.
I'm on the night's watch. I gotta watch the fire.
I can't help it. I'm wired to, I have to come in at 11:30. And then that's a little too early.
And then your parents are like, what were you doing until Tuesday? You're like, well, I beat Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, just playing video games.
Yeah. I like this, though. It's good advice.
Hey,
Can I add one little aside? I think you know this. I think I've said this before in the podcast. Never been a sleeper in person.
Or even always, as a teenager?
Even as a teenager. I once slept in until 11. And that was, I think I was in eighth grade. That was the latest I've ever slept in.
Too much?
Sometimes if I stay up late, I'm not really a big stay up late kind of person, but I do it occasionally. Stay up until like 1 or 2. I'll get up by 8, 7, something like that. I just, my internal clock. Yeah, so that's my aside. So I could not use the watch the fire stuff.
So you just have a different shift.
But
that's good, you're a go-getter.
I'm the day shift. I'm more of the, like, yeah, you know, foraging for food, right?
Yeah, I think you go forage.
I'm doing all the daytime activities. Yeah. Fishing. I'm not sure what else you would do during the day as a...
Not hunting, you're foraging.
I'm not.
You guys go ahead. I'll gather berries.
My eyesight's not good. I got glasses. So I couldn't. Yeah. I think hunting, you need eyesight. I'm pretty, you know, athletic. I get good hand eye coordination. But I think I'd be mostly like, you know, I can find. I think I would like to be alone foraging for berries.
Yeah.
Where would I would see you. Maybe just a storyteller. You're just like a storyteller guy.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't see you as a hunter. Is that insulting? I mean, I feel like you're
vaguely, but I'm trying to think about it.
Everyone needs a storyteller. Like, you pass down the stories to everyone. Like, you're how we learn, you know.
Okay. Well, that's nice. I just like to think I'd be able to tag along on a hunt.
Are you sure about that?
No, like, guys, come on.
I think you would.
I can just things with an arrow.
I don't know. I'm not taking it. I mean, I would bring you with me on the berry foraging.
Yeah. I could see accidentally eating something poisonous, too.
Yeah, I would be worried about that. I'll be honest. I'll be worried about that. I'd have you dig in the ground for stuff, carrots, stuff like that.
Yeah, every 5 seconds I'd be asking you, can I eat this?
Yeah.
This?
Might be a one-time thing.
Yeah. You know what's important?
Yeah, what's
to important? to humans' development, tribal peoples.
Yeah.
Everybody. But is diversity in your diet, right?
Oh,
they say the diverse array of food helps grow the brain and is actually really good. Do you know, koala bears only eat eucalyptus leaves?
That's probably bad for them, right?
Well, their brains used to be bigger. If you like x-ray or look into a koala's head, their brains are smaller than their skulls.
Okay.
And they've figured out their brains used to fit their skulls. Like their skulls evolved. But once they, because they used to eat more than just eucalyptus. Once they got to a point where they only eat eucalyptus leaves, their brains actually shrunk. And evolutionary, their skull sizes haven't caught up with the shrinkage of their, so in theory, on a long enough timeline, koalas' heads will shrink their dumb little brains.
Hey,
but because they only eat one type of thing. They got complacent. Movement's key. Where I'm reading all this, the book I got this from.
I was going to ask you, are you cheating on the podcast by reading outside sources?
Yeah, I finished this a couple months ago. And I had all these like tidbits ready to go. They just haven't come up. But anyway, they're making the point. It's a book called Go Wild. It is by, who is it? John Ratty and Richard Mead, like a co-authored thing.
Gotcha.
It's interesting because it looks like, and it was, I think the cover made it seem like it was marketed as like a health and fitness book.
Okay.
But I dug into it and it's actually like some evolutionary biology and some, it's pretty interesting. That campfire thing blew my mind when I read it.
That's a good tidbit. That's a good dinner party thing.
Right? Yeah.
Have you told anyone else that?
You gotta come up. You can't just start.
Well, I think you can kind of just... this does... it. You're right. I think the cover is not great.
It just makes it seem like a your tip run of the mill health and fitness. Hey, eat vegetables and run. But
I would not have guessed what you just told me came from this book.
It's fascinating. It was a library book, so I didn't underline it. But
I made
separate notes.
Mm.
Did you know one of the things that encourages diversity or like evolution or growth as a species, it's like differentiation?
Yeah.
You know how Darwin, when he on his famous the trip, the voyage of the Beagle, he figured out all the birds on different islands grew beaks differently depending on the types of seeds, right? I think that's right. But they grew differently because they were on islands and they were forced to evolve differently because they were different things. And these guys make the point that it's been at least 50,000 years for us humans. We're basically the same. And there hasn't been any big, usually natural disasters or some sort of thing, forces people onto islands or, behind big mountain chains or just separate geographical places that would force evolution or differentiation. Because you have to separate. But we've been like a homogenous species with a basic lines of communication open for about 50,000 years.
That's
isn't that kind of interesting?
That is fascinating.
I've heard people kind of wonder, like, why are we evolving to something? What's the next thing? And there might be, but it's just been, we've all been kind of milling about the same area. And there hasn't been a big thing or any separation for us to be forced to evolve different skills.
I think there is differences, but they're very, they might be
surface level. There's genetic differences, but there's not really anything other than that. It's kind of like a long scale thing. I have my own little weird theory I won't get into about how technology grows and stuff.
Okay.
And I think our technology kind of reflects what your culture wants to do.
Okay.
If the first bit of technology is like a sharpened stick, you evolve that technology because you want something. So a technology springs from what the species or whatever using it wants. And so a culture's technology develops like that. Your technology depends on what you as a culture value and want.
Gotcha.
We've been the same homogenous culture for 50,000 years, and so our technology reflects what we want. And so when people say, like, oh, why don't we have this, like, sort of Jetsons tech utopia where everything's nice? So we don't value that sort of thing. We have some pretty impressive technology, but it, forgive me for getting political, it's all surveillance and weapons and whatnot. And it reflects what we value as a culture.
Do you have a pen? Do you have a pen on you right now?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. I'm gonna recommend you a book. All right.
Okay.
It's called Darwin Comes to Town: How the Urban Jungle Drives Evolution. It's by an author. I cannot pronounce the author's name, but that's, I gave you the full title.
Have you read it?
I have read it. I read it 3 years ago, right before COVID.
Oh, cool.
And it's about how sort of like, not human, this is nature, evolves. Like, it can be from block to block or like county. Like, it's very, like, it, nature will evolve. Like, if there's a barrier and, you know, some sort of like insect can't travel that way, the two insects will evolve completely differently.
Okay.
It's fascinating. Like,
okay.
I can't remember all the stuff in it, but if you're a fan of evolution, biology, nature, like, really interesting facts, read that book.
I like stuff like that.
Which kind of leads me to believe, why are we not recommending these books to each other and nominating them for the podcast?
We probably should do more nonfiction. I was going to kind of bring up, I like the technology angle.
Yeah.
I kind of want to have a little, like, tech corner.
Tech corner. You know? Huh.
But not nerdy, like, how stuff works. I'm talking, like, kind of like what I just said, like the broader
society,
yeah, implications of technology. I've been reading a lot of Marshall McLuhan on the side.
Okay.
There's a really good baseball, he talks about baseball a lot, but I'm saving that for our baseball Patreon. He's got some good quotes. I'm gonna and maybe we pull it back in and we can get off this little, but that's that book, Go Wild, is full of little tidbits like that. It's fascinating. The Darwin Comes to Town, I wrote it down. I thought you were going to have a joke. I thought you were going to make a joke.
No. You reminded me of that book I read. And that's, I recommend it. So look at us.
Two side recommends. Yeah.
Look at us. Yeah. All right. Let me do the intro. Welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and books. I'm Peter, joined as always by Matt. I mean, look at us.
Usually we're just horsing around in the
intro. We kind of horsed around a little bit. I mean, picking berries and not letting you go out on the hunt and stuff like that. But look at us.
Oh, yeah. Bringing
books.
I thought about that more.
No,
I'd be a,
stop.
I'd be the lead hunter.
The lead hunter?
Yeah.
The lead hunter.
Maybe a second. I'd be like the stringer bell of the hunter. I'd be the number two guy.
Hmm.
You like string.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I'm going to let you go with that because I don't want to make you feel bad. You want to be the number two berry picker with me? Like, maybe we're expanding. Maybe we're doing more than just, you know, raspberries.
You don't get to be the head berry picker.
Yeah, I do.
Hmm.
I am.
You do what? You do what? Your wife's the head berry picker and she tells you what to do and where to go.
Stop.
Yeah.
you're not wrong there, but Matt, we kind of planned tonight's episode to be kind of a wherever we want to go. No, you know, specific books. We're not nominating books. We're going to be talking about books that we've been reading on the side. We got some mailbag questions. We kind of have a lot of different places we can go. I wanted to start on something I've started to do over on our Patreon, which is discuss my monthly library book checkout and what books I'm putting on hold. Right? It's kind of a fun little project I have. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before. I like looking up new books, seeing what's coming out. I'll tell you about them sometimes. I'll surprise you. I'm like, hey, guess what's coming out? I have one for you in a little bit. But February, March, or in January, I read three library books. February, just didn't have time. Zero books from the library. I think I checked out probably six. That's not a great. But there were a couple that I mentioned to you before, and I don't know if you remember this. One that I started two of them that I think I would kind of want to return to. I want to bring to the listeners' attention and your attention. I'll start with the one I don't think I've mentioned to you. It's called My Father's House by Joseph O'Connor.
You mentioned that.
Yeah. Irish author. It's a historical fiction novel set in Italy during World War II. And I believe it deals with the Vatican and secretly getting people out of kind of the war, basically getting them, I think, to England. And if I'm correct, I think it's based on a true story.
Read the like first citizens?
What's that?
Like citizens, civilians,
coming
out of the war zone.
Yeah, I think I don't know if it's strictly like Jewish families. I don't know. I didn't get that far into the book, but I think the Vatican somehow like, and there's a cast of characters that kind of focuses on getting people out of Italy. I think the book takes place in like 42 and in the future, kind of looking the characters looking back on their time. Oh. I like the format and everything about it, but I got 40-50 pages in and I just didn't have time. So that's new. And that's an author that he had another book, I believe, called Shadow Play that got a lot of praise released a couple of years ago. So that's an author I kind of want to put a tab on for later. From what I read, I liked it. So that is a new one. Started it, didn't finish. This one I think is right up your alley. And I told you about this one too. This one is called G-Man, J. Edgar Hoover and the Making of American Century by Beverly Gage.
You did mention that.
I know you like a good biography of, American powerful, controversial figures. This one is 700 plus pages. I read the first three chapters, four chapters, dealt with his early life. So it's a kind of a nut bolts biography of him, I believe. But going, I think, obviously the kind of his adult life is going to be probably the main draw for people there. But what I read, really liked the writing style, a ton of information going kind of, why Hoover became who he was kind of from his early life. So those are two books checked out. I liked, but didn't have time. The J. Edgar Hoover one, it was just too long.
Yeah. Hey, and that happened.
700 pages.
When you brought that up, I got excited. And in my head, I was like, oh, yeah, I know a lot about Hoover, And then I kind of unwound why I think that. Most of my knowledge from Hoover comes from James Ellroy novels.
Yeah.
In the American Tabloid trilogy, he's a character. And so I was like, yeah, I know Hoover. And it's from Ellroy's caricature. But
yeah, the backstory to his life was interesting, and it's kind of hard to tell like how much, I think with any sort of biography, how much an event in someone's early life like makes them who they are, right? Like I always think that people from the outside can look at an event and be like, oh, that must have been a, and you're like, actually, that, I don't know. That's always been a thing with me, biographies. It's like placing how much importance you should place on an event.
Yeah, you don't
kind of, really, when you don't know, I don't know.
Sometimes you can, Hoover became very power hungry.
Yeah.
But he was a very competent bureaucrat. He formed the FBI into kind of what it is. So you figure, if you go back into his childhood, how much do you look for conflict with his parents or whatever and project that onto who he became? Or
I'm not saying the book did that, but it just as a general rule, it's kind of like, But it was a lot of it's hard to say I'll ever get back to it, but maybe one day. I did check out a book, Matt, and this was purely like, oh, I want to be up with the, the cool kids and the literary scene, reading the big quote unquote important books of the literary fiction time. And this book was called The Deluge by Stephen Markley. 800 pages fiction. I read a couple of reviews after I checked it out, and I was like, I have no idea why I picked this book up. It sounded like a chore. There was one review that I had a good quote of. It says, characters disappear for as many as 100 pages and then reemerge a year later, necessitating repeated exposition dumps. That doesn't sound like a fun book to read. Does it?
It seemed cool. No. It seemed cool. It's like what the cool.
It seemed like it was. He had written a book, I believe, a couple of years ago called Ohio or something like that. That actually I want to read. But this one, I was like, oh, I just saw it on. Got some good reviews from a couple of things, and then some really bad reviews. And then I, reading some of the reasons why I got bad reviews, I was like, it kind of aligns with how I, you know, my sensibility. So that was I didn't even read the first page. Returned it to the library. That's, I mean, I don't know. There's one book though, Matt, that I added that I don't know if you know about. And maybe in a month or two, because it doesn't come out until April, I believe, 25th. Okay. That we might want to add. What's that?
This is the one you said I'd be excited about?
Yes. This is going to be exciting. Okay. You might know about this. I might, you know, you might do the research that I don't know about.
Well, let's find out.
This is an author you got me into, and I've read a couple of his works, but I haven't, you know, gone through all of his different series and his kind of standalone works. This would be Dennis Lehane. Dennis Lehane has a new book out, Small Mercies. Yeah, takes place in the 1970s in Boston. It's a Lehane novel. The kind of blurb I saw says it might rival Mystic River. Okay. I don't know if you would consider that his best work or one.
No,
other,
probably
one
Gone his, Baby Gone.
Gone Baby Gone. There you go.
I like him though.
He's very good. I like him a lot.
I'm excited. I thought you were going to say David Mitchell, but this is almost just as good. Yeah.
That would be great too. But no, that comes out in April. So I kind of want to tentatively ask you for May.
Oh yeah, we're doing that.
Can we do Dennis Lehane?
We pencil that in, and we'll probably do a selection. But you know how sometimes we just, like when Utopia Avenue came out, it wasn't really a course. It was like, yeah, we're doing this one. Yeah, I think we'll pencil that in.
Okay. Small Mercies.
Go behind the scenes and ask for an advance copy. We'll see.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that too.
We'll try. I mean, I tried to get an advance to the Sally Rooney and nothing.
Nothing, but hey.
We got Fake Towns.
I think you say, hey, you've been a fan for over a decade.
We play the podcast angle. It's like we got a podcast, and if Dennis wants to come on, promote Dennis, or Mr. Lehane.
Probably go with Mr. Lehane.
Yeah.
That's exciting for you. So
that is.
That's my side reading projects. Nothing I finished, but there's some good stuff, you know. Upcoming that I'm excited about. Yeah. I put on hold this book called The Long Reckoning, a story of war, peace, and redemption in Vietnam by George Black that's coming out soon. That looks at sort of the aftermath of Agent Orange, unexploded bombs in Vietnam, and the toll it took on the population.
Yeah.
Sounds like a really depressing book. The review I read was like, this is like a great addition to the Vietnam book canon type deal. Yeah. So, all right, Matt, do you want to move ahead with questions or what do you want to do?
Yeah, we'll do mailbag. Real quick, I want to just, speaking of books that were sent to us, I got a book a while ago called House Asleep by Brad Kelly. Just finished. Ooh. It was very good. It was very good. I'm not quite sure how to describe it. I don't want to give anything away. Okay. I said in a little tweet, like, saying, hey, I love this book, that it was a little bit of Murakami, a little bit of the Magus, and something all of his own. And I hope that came off as complimentary, because I like all those things.
Yeah.
But I realize not everybody likes Murakami.
You might not know, but I know you. Those are all favorites of yours.
So here's just a little blurb off the back to kind of whet your appetite. At an exquisite mansion perched on an Edenic plateau, 20-some guests are remembering their dreams as clearly as yesterday. All that's required is to let an eccentric guru called the Diving Man work their subconscious like a snake charmer. Parts Willy Wonka, Judge Holden, and Timothy Leary. He seems to know what can't be known and professes a bizarre philosophy, spends his days leaping from the cliffs to hold his breath for minutes on end in the churning river below. He is also plotting against the dissolution of the world.
I like
It's
that.
like an esoteric thriller, I guess. It was good. It's kind of modeled kind of like The Magus is, like a little thriller, but a little brainy and psychological. And like we mentioned with the Blithedale Romance and other, like the difference between a genre book and a literature is the ability of the author to kind of sink into, have some insights every now and then while keeping the story moving. And it kind of dips into something and you maybe underline it. It's like, oh, that's true. I never thought of that. So this book was that.
Okay.
House of Sleep by Brad Kelly. Highly recommended it.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is gonna be something. This is like a positive statement for me. That sounds like something I would read from like Eastern Europe and be like, "Hey man, I read this book from like," and you're like, "What?" And you're like, and I explain it to you. You're like, "Actually, that sounds pretty good."
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Like
Yeah.
the philosophical sort of like a not your typical kind of, book, I guess most people would read. But
Yeah.
once you dip your toe into it, it's good.
It's good. And he's a good writer.
I like that.
You know, and it made me think, like, because Sam Ernst's book he
Yeah.
sent to us, The Manifesto, House of Sleep, even Diplomats and Admirals, they were all very good books. And I think I'm not just blowing smoke here. Like they could all, had things shifted differently, like they just they're as good as the Sally Rooney fake account, some of the other, best-selling stuff that's out there.
Would they? I think
Does
those
that make
three
sense?
all
Like
have,
they're
and
it's
I haven't read House of Sleep, but some of the other like modern stuff we've read, we dabbled in. We don't do a lot of it, but it's all kind of navel gazing at some point. What
Yeah.
we've described, and Sam Ernst, it's more of like a creative endeavor. It's more like storytelling, and I don't know. It seems more, there's more risk that the author's putting out, and maybe it's just public, publication houses are just not looking for like, they're looking for like the same thing, like the MFA, like, oh, let me just write about my life and it's blah.
Yeah, and then that's the, and I don't want to sound insulting. I'm sure
No.
they're all, they're all fine. But I'm just trying to say, like, these should be like best sellers. They
Bigger.
really
Yeah.
are
Yeah. I agree.
that good. And they're not the same thing. They're not the navel gazing person in Brooklyn just walks around and worries about stuff, right? There's more to it than that. I wonder if it's like how most movies now are like Marvel movies,
Yeah.
and you think that there's good scripts out there, and every now and then you come across an indie movie, and you're like, that was a good little story there. Like they don't make big budget theater movies like that anymore. I think because I wonder if it's publishing houses like movie studios are afraid of risk. They kind of have it in their heads, this certain formula works, and that's what they put out.
There
But
must be like art house publishers, like how there's art house
I
movie
think
people,
there
like,
are. Yeah.
and maybe we just don't know about them, but I feel like just sort of, I felt like I saw like a YouTube video of a guy talking about some, and I wish I'd written it down, like a publisher just kind of like mainly focused in, I don't know how I would describe it, but it's sort of like not off the beaten path, but unique works of fiction. I'll put it that way, I guess. And I wonder if it's just like, Random House is just going to be like, give me what we've been doing for the last 12 years. And maybe they'll be late to like how the market changes, and then they'll switch and they'll do something else. But they're probably just kind of going with the status quo, I would guess.
Yeah. And they got us. I mean, if you Yeah, we got to do what sells.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's plenty of good stuff out there. I'm basically just trying to say, hey, Sam's book, Brad's book, Dale's book. Go get them. They really are good.
Yeah. House of Sleep has a lot of positive reviews on Goodreads, which I'm always a big fan of. I like it. Yeah. All right, man.
And highly recommend it. Thanks for sending it to us. Yeah.
Dennis Lehane, if you're listening, send us your new book. You see how we support the, you know.
The struggling artist.
The struggling artist. We could also talk about The Wire with him. Anyway.
Dennis Lehane wrote on The Wire.
Matt, do you have...
One of the reasons that show was so good was because they hired
outside voices.
Like three fairly prominent crime writers to write on their crime show.
I have a question for you. It's going to be a little bit controversial. Okay. Is The Wire overrated, properly rated, or underrated?
I think properly.
Properly? Okay. It was probably underrated for most of its. I think it had a point where it got a little too.
It's like certain bands where bands might make people new, like actually people new to it, actually not like it because their fans are kind of obnoxious. But if you deal with the work itself, it's actually good.
I don't think
maybe fans got overzealous, but I think the work holds up. It
very
actually
good point.
Really good.
Very good point. I just wanted to see if my take wasn't crazy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But you like it too. It's just
I love it. It's fantastic.
It did become a thing, especially like being online and stuff on Twitter. People like, man, white dudes in their 30s love The Wire. And it's just like, yeah, that's true. That's me. And I do like that show. So maybe I'm just a stereotype. But
it could be stereotypes.
Stereotypes or
there was also a thing where it was like people were like, what's your favorite TV show? And like and you would just be like, The Wire. And be like, I don't know. Kind of became a, but I think now it's time has passed where it's like, okay, you can say it without.
Yeah, I think you should. It's still my favorite.
Okay. I was just trying to hash out where we should feel about our love of The Wire.
Properly rated.
Okay.
No, don't let the fans ruin it. And you're right, that wave, I think, has passed.
You know what you can also do with some of this art? You just watch it and enjoy it and don't converse with other people about it.
I don't worry about people on the internet kind of don't like anything.
I kind of did that with the final season of Game of Thrones. I understood it was bad. Like, let me get that out. Like, I understood why people didn't like it. And I've said this before in the podcast, and people have agreed with me. Where are the other shows with the dragons? Show me them.
Yeah.
Show me where we have other shows where dragons destroy whole cities and it's like crazy graphics and it's just like, okay. And people are like, well, that's not what the character would do. It's made up. it's not historically accurate. And it's like, oh, it's not, the books don't get that far. Now I'm ranting. You said you had a rant and now I'm just
I'll seg into that. But that's is that your hottest take as far as TV shows go?
No, I know that the final season's bad.
No, but like is that your most controversial take?
It might
be. As far as TV.
Hey, but let me say this. Life is short. Enjoy the dragons. Move on.
enjoy it for what it was.
And if you don't like it, that's fine too. There's stuff I don't like and I'll tell people that I don't like it. I might have zagged when people were, you know, saying this. But in the end, whatever. I just liked the dragons and they sped it up way too fast and it could have been better. But in the end, I'd watch it again. The final season.
Hey,
that's
still
probably my hottest take. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I like it. I haven't, I stopped watching after season 3 because I'm waiting on the books to come out.
Okay, good luck on that.
So in 20 years, I'm going to finally watch.
When Brandon Sanderson finishes the series.
Yeah.
Because he's going to. You know that, right?
I think George Martin should take his time, make him good. You know, that's all I'll say.
If the listener doesn't know this, but I've been in Matt's house, I've perused his bookshelves. You have like the old school mass market from the early 2000s, maybe 90s, possibly.
I started reading them when there were just three out, like in 2002, 2003, before the TV show.
They do not have the TV show tie-in. It is like collector's items at Matt's house.
So I try not to be hipster about it, but yeah, I was a fan before the TV show.
Yeah, and you didn't buy those like, oh, let me get some vintage, you know, Game of Thrones books. Because I might do that just to be kind of cool.
No, they were what was available. That was the
current. That was the only thing you could get.
Three.
Did I tell you I started the first book and I didn't really like it? I'm not going to give up. But
Before the TV show came out? Yeah.
After the TV show came out.
Okay.
The problem is,
you haven't finished.
I would read a character's name and I'd look him up, and now that's not a way to read a book. Right?
Yeah. It is better to have your own.
Because when I was watching the TV show, I'll be honest, I couldn't tell you exactly what that character's name was, but I kind of knew what their relation was to other people. Gotcha. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
It's a little bit. Yeah. Anyway. Hmm. That's my hottest take. That was my passion. What's that?
When the sixth Game of Thrones comes out, we'll have to pencil that in like we did with Lehane here.
Okay.
I'm like, all right, we're going to. And you're going to dive right in. You're not going to have to reread the whole five. You're just going to dive right in.
I haven't read the five. So how would I reread?
I know.
Okay.
I know. So you're just jumping right in with the sixth and we'll go from there. So I'm not rereading. I'm going to count on my memory to just. So I got, let's see if I remember.
So it'll be you not remembering stuff and me just coming in cold and just knowing the books.
I think I might be able to. When the third Name of the Wind comes out, I'm just going to jump back in and see what I remember too. It's hard to try to write like a 200 page little thriller, you know, just like that. It takes a couple years if you're lucky and disciplined. So a 1200 page fantasy book takes a while.
You're being very generous right now.
Yeah, I'm being. This ties into my rant, and I'm going to seg into sports, but it is the authors owe their work, their life's work, their art, they owe it to themselves.
I agree.
To make it as good as they can be. They don't owe us, the fans, anything. As far as, well, they owe us a decent piece of work, right? They owe us some of that. There's a relationship that forms there. And I think, but once they decide to do it and to write a book, they owe us not a half-baked, I want it to be good. They're writing for posterity.
I agree.
Right?
You told me 12 years ago, the first two books are coming out. The third book is done.
Oh, Name of the Wind? Yeah.
Yes. Patrick Rothfuss has all three of them done.
That was the thing. That was the press at the time.
I'm still waiting from my apology. Okay.
What I'm saying is,
apologize.
They don't work for George Martin, Patrick Rothfuss, Neil Gaiman, and his long-awaited American Gods sequel. Those guys don't work for us.
I could care less.
They have lives. They have
gross.
So I'm just saying they don't owe us everything we want on our time frame. Right? They're doing their own thing. You know who else doesn't owe us anything?
I really want to counter this really quick because I think this is a fun conversation. None of these my opinions I hold. My counter to that would be, I agree with that with one caveat. They don't owe us anything, but they certainly like the praise and love that they get from people.
Why do you say that? Do they like it?
I think they do.
Do you like it at first, but then it becomes a burden and it actually counterproductive to producing good art?
If people ignored Rothfuss and Martin and they just didn't care if they were writing or not, I think that would bum them out.
Maybe. I wonder if they kind of want to just be left alone to finish their stuff. I bet when you first see your name in print or you first see your book crack the top 10 bestseller list, you're like, that is cool. And it's probably flattering when somebody asks you for an autograph. But at a certain point, I think the pressure probably shifts and you're just like, I wish I could be left alone to finish my book without having to do all the other press stuff would
but
probably distract
you don't have
the
to do the
press
public stuff.
Is clamoring for.
They could
yeah,
just
you do.
Not no, they could just go quiet.
I think you're kind of obligated to.
No, I don't think you are.
No, but that's the thing. But saying, oh, they could just go write it, that is a spoiler.
You know who's loving this right now? Your brother, because he wants us to disagree more.
That is true. Well, and that's the key to making good talk radio, too. Well, this isn't talk radio. We're above
this is
that.
Talk. This is
the key is to have people. You can't, even if you really agree, people pretend not. Anyway, what was I saying? They don't owe the spoiled fans anything. They owe themselves, and they're like parents with a little kid. The fans deep down want a really good book, and that takes a while. So they can't just rush something. It's actually good. They're not just rushing something out. Speaking of, segue into, you know who else doesn't owe us anything?
What's that?
Mr. Aaron Rodgers. I was just thinking about how weird it is. This
what
is, going,
is this transition? Okay.
Is.
Aaron Rodgers.
Because I listen when I'm running errands and driving around and stuff, I should be listening to audiobooks, but I listen to talk rate sports talk radio.
Yeah, I love it. Love
and it's kind of driving me nuts, the narrative. Because he kind of famously he mentioned he was going to a darkness retreat.
Like a yurt.
And everybody just piled on him and said it was so weird. And this guy's a weirdo. He has to go to darkness retreat to figure out if he still wants to play football. And A, I was a little offended because I had actually heard of those before, like those little dark things. Like you sit in a dark room for 4 days. And I thought it was kind of cool. I don't know that I could actually do it. But I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. Because, you know, people do that. It's the same principle as, you know, like if you're those float tanks, sensory deprivation chambers.
Yeah.
Is why people meditate, is what certain mystical Christians or Muslims or whatever, that's what they mean by prayer.
Mm.
It's disconnecting yourself from your normal five senses. And if you do that, like a Buddhist monk meditating up in Nepal, you shut off your conscious mind, your normal senses that you're used to. And if you do that for long enough, you realize there's something else still there. And that's a little like, what? So what is that? And so that's why you go to a dark room for 4 days. You're purposely cutting yourself off from all your sensory experiences. And you're kind of getting in like, what, you know, what's still there? What is that? So, but that's the, you can think it's hokum or whatever, but it's not that weird. I think it's actually kind of a cool thing.
I'm going to push back
and
again.
So the narrative, what?
I'm going to push back again.
No, I know, but finish, I'm just saying like, the narrative that it's just so insane for a person to do kind of bugs me. And then that led me to, well, what, this guy can't take a month after the season to determine if he wants to come back. Because that's the other part of it is like, he should make a decision now. All these football fans, it's like, it's the off season. It doesn't start up again until August. You can take a couple weeks and decide if you want to put your body through that again. I imagine it's a bit of a mix of, I feel like an old man, it hurts when I walk, but if I retire, I'm never going to walk in a stadium with 80,000 people cheering for me again. I imagine it's kind of a tough. And you know what? Like George R. R. Martin and Patrick Rothfuss, take your time to figure out if you want to do it. You don't owe us. Like, what do you even, like, honestly, sports talk radio people, why do you even care? Or if you're not, especially if you're not a Packers fan,
stop.
I don't know what Aaron Rodgers is doing right now. Like, why? Why? Who cares?
Here's my pushback. It's going to be very simple. I have no problem with the quiet room or whatever. He seems desperate to have attention based on his like unique. So he tells people he's
does
doing it. He tells them before he goes to it. That's where he does.
No,
last year he did
interview.
It. What?
It came up in an interview.
I thought
and
he
everybody
told, no,
on
I thought
to
he knew
it,
about
like,
it beforehand. I'd heard it about it. Up, he was going to go to a, he's going to do some thinking or a quiet. I think it came out before he actually went. So
yeah,
it all seems a bit self-serving, and it's like
it came up in an interview. One of the things it came up on the Pat McAfee show, right? And I think that segment became a hit for McAfee, and people like it because it's an athlete saying something beyond the cliche athlete talk. And I guess that's kind of the double-edged sword, because people roll their eyes at like athlete talk. It's like, yeah, we're going to have a good ball game. You know, there's nothing there. But when somebody actually does speak their mind, the media latches onto it like it's the craziest thing in the world. When you just, he's like, yeah, I'm going to take a little time. I'm going to go do this. And everybody talks about him like he's nuts.
Well, no, I just think it's, I think part of the thing is once you get to the end of your career, you realize like once you lead, once you're not playing, people care about you a lot less.
Sure.
And people don't, and the players, people don't like that. Like if you just stop writing, people kind of don't care maybe as much. And so you have to keep your name in the conversation, right?
Yeah, but you're assuming he's doing that. You're assuming.
Oh, I think that 100% he's doing that.
He's not calling press conferences. He said one thing in an interview he
does. No, Matt.
He does an interview.
He does a weekly thing with Pat McAfee. That's essentially.
But it just came up in conversation.
Oh,
it just
I think
came
he
up.
Meant to do that.
He's you're allowed to answer questions in interviews.
I don't care. It doesn't bother me.
Well, no, I just don't think it's as nefarious as that. I don't think. Because the media.
I think it's egotistical, but that's fine. I don't.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't think so. And he might be egotistical. I mean, it probably takes a little bit of that to be quarterback, but I don't think the media wants access to the media wants access to athletes.
Yeah.
And it's better for them if they actually speak their mind or say something halfway controversial. But there is something kind of, I almost said gross, weird about how they'll turn around when they get what they want and something interesting or halfway controversial, they kind of start tearing down and denigrating the person who says it. You know, they're like, oh, that's neat. What is a darkness retreat? They're like, this guy's a weirdo. It's like he's being open and giving honest questions to answers put to him. And then he does that and gives you guys content, and you just turn around. And
is this your rant? You said you had a rant. This is your rant.
This is my rant. They mess with George Martin. They mess with Aaron Rodgers. I feel a little bad for Tom Brady. Like if Tom Brady decides to come back in a month, you know what?
There's a quote from the TV show Mad Men that I think is applicable here. That's what the money's for. That's what the money is for.
I mean, he'll be fine either way.
That's what the money is for. Is some dork on talk radio or some two podcasts. That's what the money is for. All right.
He's fine.
He's not making $50,000 a year. And we're like, why are you going to a dark? You know, this isn't Joe who works the forklift with us and we're making fun of him. He's fine. This is the guy who was like, you know what? I might quit football to be the Jeopardy host. I think he likes being a little different, and he likes telling people that he's different. And I like that, but I think he likes saying it, and he likes talking about it, and how he goes. He did some sort of drug ayahuasca or something last season. So it seems like you ever meet the guy in college who's like, oh, you know what I'm doing. It's always something strange. He's always up to something different. And he's always like, look, oh, this is how you really got to live. And you're like, okay. I mean, that's fine. But I don't have to be excited about it.
Well, yeah. You don't have to care. And that is
the thing
to remember in all of this. It's they're fine. They got plenty of money. They're fine. But I don't know if you're actually giving interviews and giving honest answers. I don't think is necessarily fair to label it as attention seeking. It's just my point. And it can be a matter of taste. It can be, you know, we don't have
It popped in my head that he would be the kind of character that Don Powell would just eviscerate in a book.
See,
I think
I
so.
Who I'd love
like
to see
a celebrity, celebrity wives, celebrity. Oh,
I think that's narrative. I think he, and you're right. He'll be fine, but I think he gets a bad rap.
That's what
I think he gets
for.
A bad rap. I think he gets a bad rap in the media. I do.
That's fine.
I think, but he you're right. He is fine.
He's fine.
He'll be fine.
I mean,
that was my little. The basic point was that. athletes who are thinking about retiring and wishy-washy, I don't think they owe you. Like, they don't owe you. They can take you. You're allowed to take a month. I think the narrative surrounding, like, make a decision now. It's like, yeah, let them take the time. It's fine.
Okay. I mean, I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers' salary. It's pretty high.
It's more than we make.
Let's see here. Yeah, career wise, and I don't know if this is guaranteed. After this upcoming year, he will have made over $100 million.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
No, wait, his current contract is 3 years for $150 million.
Yeah.
So he's
I do think, and if you look at our Patreon, it's less than that.
That's less.
We make less. Split between two people. Yeah.
So. Actually, sorry, Matt. His career earnings for the last 18 years? Do you want to guess what his career earnings are?
300?
Yeah.
400 mil?
$305 million. So that's what the money's for.
Well, that's a good point. Point taken. I'm just saying with the authors too.
Okay.
You know, it just everybody relax and just let people take their time, make their decisions.
Do you want me to Google how much money George Martin has made?
I bet it's less than Rogers, but I bet it's pretty good.
All right.
But once again, they don't work for you. Like it's especially with Martin and the authors. Like let them do their thing. They don't work for you.
Martin made $150 million from HBO.
Now that's aside from having the books be bestsellers. And
that does not include the rights to the show.
Okay. Well,
that was just his paycheck per season.
So he can probably handle the fans.
I can probably
book. But
I guess what I would do if I had $150 million, I probably wouldn't have the work ethic to work on a 1500 page fantasy novel series that people are clamoring for. I get it. It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. You know what I'd do if I had $150 million?
You'd buy a lot of tracksuits.
I'd go on a darkness retreat.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right. Mailbag.
Yeah. Let's get the books. Man, we were Aaron Rodgers. I didn't know you had that in you. So you were tying Aaron Rodgers to Patrick Rothfuss and George.
Well, the narrative, because I had kind of had the darkness thing in the back of my mind. Like, oh, that'd be kind of neat to do one of these days, you know? And then everybody starts acting like the guy who does the darkness thing's crazy. And it's like, hey, I like that. It kind of it went from there.
I think if you do it, it's not crazy.
Yeah, I got to see how much money, like, I could do it. I could probably dig a hole in the backyard and DIY it.
Hey, I have an attic that I'm in currently right now that only gets used during the podcast hours.
Got to be quiet too.
I'll be
not
quiet.
Just dark. Yeah.
It'll be, okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'll keep it in mind. We'll do a DIY job on this thing.
Let's get some mailbag questions, Matt.
All right. Hey, we asked for mailbag questions. A little bit ago, and some of you guys obliged, so I'm excited.
Right.
I'm excited.
I have not heard these before, so I'm coming into these fresh.
First question is from Robin, one of our patrons. Would you buy a book from a used bookstore if it's more expensive than the same copy online?
Oof. I think that means like Amazon, right? Amazon selling it.
Probably.
I would. With kind of the reasoning behind it is sometimes you from a used bookstore, you can get an edition that you can't always get from said Amazon, right?
Right. Yeah.
So the Robertson Davies books that we're reading, I got these old editions that they weren't expensive, but let's say they were $15. I think I would have gotten them anyway because they were just cool. I'm guessing 80s paperback. And that was kind of the thing that sold me on them. So yes, if it was a used book and it doesn't always have to be a cool edition, but yes, I will spend more than what the Amazon Sometimes I'll go, I'll be honest, sometimes in a pinch, if I can't find something cheap and it's, you know, we're not made of gold here, I will occasionally go over to Amazon to see if I can get a deal. But I do like to do the independent or used bookstore. So that's my honest answer. So
I'm with you. I'm with you. Mostly local, but if I need it soon or if it's like, we're talking like 20 bucks or more, I might get it online. But for the most part, I will check local bookstores first.
I will also check bookshop.org or something. Sometimes there will be like special deals on you can even do, there's a UK thing where it takes forever to ship to you, but they'll occasionally have like UK editions that are cheaper than the Amazon edition or the, you know, so that it's kind of a workaround to the Amazon question. So, but
yeah,
I like that question.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Robin, thank you.
Yeah. Hey, you know what's a good local bookstore? If you're in Sacramento, California.
Oh, always like
Time-Tested Books. Yeah.
Say that again, Matt.
Time-Tested Books.
My favorite part of this new series you have going is I like all the different kind of independent bookstore names. They're all kind of, I always kind of like, oh, give it. What would you say if we lived in Sacramento? Would you say, hey, do you want to go to Time or do you want to go to Time Test? Like, how do you shorten it? Do you?
I think you say Time Tested.
Time Tested. Okay.
Not the books. Sacramento's most beloved bookstore since 1981.
1981. Wow.
Okay. If you're up there in the Pacific Northwest, it is on 21st Street between L and K Streets.
I've never been to Sacramento. I think I've driven through it, but maybe once. But
I've never been to California.
I've never been to California. Sacramento, up in the north of kind of a forgotten, it's the capital, but it's kind of a forgotten city in California.
It's overshadowed by LA and San Francisco.
It's, yes, overshadowed by San Francisco is close by.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Hey.
Time-tested books.
I like it. Sacramento, California. Shout out.
Yeah.
1981. Hey, they got a good thing going.
It's wild. That's 40 years. It's over 40 years now.
Yeah.
Hey, so this next question, this is a good one. I just got it like an hour before the show, so I might gestate on a little more.
Okay.
But I want your take on it too. We might circle back to it in a week, but I think I got it. It's a good question. What is a good idea, bad execution book? Like, what would have been a great book with a different author, or maybe the author had waited 25 years?
Ooh. So you said good idea, bad execution?
Execution, yeah.
Let me pull. Oh, that's a good one. That is tough because I kind of.
That comes from my friend Randy.
I like that. Thank you.
He's the one who sent us the Scorpio Races.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm going through.
That's a good question.
My book's read, and we go to bad reviews that I've given books. Okay. Yeah. It takes a second to load.
Well, so let me. The one that came to mind, and I'm going to meditate on it for another week. Okay. But what came to mind was actually the Topeka School.
Okay.
I think a different author could make that subject matter funny. I think the Topeka School itself is almost an unwitting satire. Like, it is kind of one of those plotting, navel-gazing, the main character just kind of hand-wringing, like, oh, am I a good or bad person? But it's not really that deep. So I think in different hands, that could actually be a that exact scenario and the character doing the exact same things and having the same internal monologue could be funny if you have an author who's just a little bit above it all. Like it could be a Don Powell type novel, actually.
Yeah.
She would feast on that sort of thing. So that's kind of what came to mind. And I think that scenario with a different, funnier author could be pretty good.
I think, yeah, in a lot of cases, maybe the sort of the self-seriousness of the author kind of gets in their way.
And a funnier person could actually deal with the same things, but make it
a witty and more observant. Maybe a person who's more like is also interested in other people.
Well, and you could have a funnier person would actually see kind of the social fabric that goes into what made that book so annoying to read was I don't think the guy got it. You know, he's very self-serious and is genuinely concerned about petty things versus the type of author who could zoom out and realize, oh, this thing's funny. You know, like, that's what came to mind. And I think that's a good idea, bad execution. But I'm going to think about it more, maybe come back in a week or so with another answer. Good question.
I like that. Yeah. I was thinking, I like Kurt Vonnegut's ideas. They're all sometimes a little too silly.
Oh, yeah?
And I was trying to think. I like Kurt Vonnegut. For some reason, I think he's, like, out of favor, maybe. I could be completely wrong about that. But I like his ideas, but sometimes, like, I think is it possible these books come a little too easy to him if he's not, like, I don't know. What's your experience with Vonnegut?
I've read just a few, and I like them, but I haven't read nearly all of them.
I like them, but I'm like, I think could they be more? I don't know. That might be a harsh because I haven't read them in a while. But I used to read them in college all the time, and I liked them. But that's the kind of author, maybe not a specific work that I have in mind, but just like I like the idea, but sometimes the execution's like a little. I'd have to reread them to be completely honest to form that opinion about him, but. I don't know.
It kind of leads us into her next question. She sent us two.
Okay.
And this will be easy. What's a book that Matt hated that Peter loved and vice versa?
I think I've been more negative than you have.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what came to mind? The big one.
What's that?
Better See Dunces.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's a top 10 for me, and you didn't like it.
Yeah, that would be the best example of me not liking something and you liking it.
It was silly. Like, you think Vonnegut's too silly. Confession of Dunces is silly funny. You don't like that. You like a little, you got to have a little pinch of the sad and the drama and the, which is fine, but I think that's the big one, right?
Is there something that I like more than you? That's the tough question.
Not that we've done on the show. Yeah. I'm sure it'll come up. And I bet if we listed like everything we've read the last 20 years, we'd probably think of something. But
yeah, I'm trying to think here. I'm trying to think of something you were lukewarm on. See, I think you like the Turn of the Screw more than me.
Yeah, but that wasn't strong.
That wasn't a strong opinion.
I thought it was fine. I'm not going to like revisit it. You know, it was, so it wasn't, I liked Fake Accounts more than you.
Yeah. That came up.
But that wasn't as big of a split as Confederate. Confederacy was the big one. Cause I love that book.
That was a pretty big, I forgot about that. That was a pretty big, split.
That's about it so far.
And I think that was a surprising thing for me too. Cause I was like, oh, I felt like I was going to love the book. It was weird reading it and being like, why don't I love this?
Yeah, because it's too silly. You're a very serious person.
Looking at this, I think we got to find a book that you don't like. I think that's my goal for this year. Is I got to find a book that I convince you to read that I think you're not going to like.
Because the ones we wind up reading – do you highly recommend? I wind up liking a lot.
I know.
Like Drive Your Plow, The Bridge of Nadrina. We do pretty well, I think, actually. Do we need to heighten some tension to make it more like Sports Talk?
I mean, we were going head-to-head on the Aaron Rodgers thing, but I think you just – do you just like all books?
No. Well, we both didn't like
it. Well, we both didn't like it. Speak of school. We
didn't like it.
But see, you like the Sally Rooney one. What's the Beautiful World? Yeah. Where Are You?
See, and I thought that was
Hey,
funny.
how about
Like, I
this?
thought it
How
was
about we read the
funny.
first Sally Rooney? That could be, maybe I like
I
it.
have it here. Yeah.
Okay.
We will, because Thad actually said, hey, you guys should read more books that you don't like. Not necessarily disagreements between us, but maybe we should, because we do generally kind of like, oh, I liked it. So maybe we need to weave that in.
But yeah, I mean, but sometimes we get into like we're reading Dawn Powell right now, and I started that book yesterday. I almost texted you, and I was almost like, "This is just she's just." I was like,
See,
Chris
if you
Collinsworth on
didn't
like Monday night. I'm like, Matt, this guy is just, or this Dawn Powell is
really
just,
love this guy.
she's better than Hemingway. It's so
She
good.
is though. See,
So.
if you didn't like her, that might be an issue. We get past Confederacy.
Because there's just one book. Yeah. No, yeah. A Time to Be Born. I just started it, and it's just, I got my pen handy, and I'm just, so that's smart. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, that's, I love that. That's funny. I'm trying to get better at this. I'm trying to find, you find humor much easier than I do. And I don't know. I might just be like, I turn off my humor when I'm reading, the humor part of my brain. But I'm trying to like engage that when I'm like, okay, look for the funny. And I'm like, oh, and I'm
Is
like,
this
okay.
person joking?
Yeah. So that's, I like that.
That's a
So
good question to ask yourself. All right.
look,
Hey, those were good questions, Randy.
those were great. I love, yeah.
And
The
that
mailbag,
first
I
one was
like.
really good. We'll circle back to that. All right.
That is a good.
Back to this is Robin again. And this is all right, hold on. How do you toggle between all the books you're reading for this podcast, for your Patreon book reviews, and your author interviews? Okay, she says, I feel like I need to start Master Margarita over again because I got sidetracked. So we,
I will restart stuff.
so how
I
do
will.
we toggle stuff? It's by the seat of our pants, and I make notes and then just try to review them and sink back
Would
into them.
say the biggest thing for me is the notes. I started doing the podcast, I take notes in the book. I have like a little system that I created, or like I have a boxing, I underline, I kind of like write out why I think this section is important sometimes. And that for some reason helps me remember while we're juggling all these books, like why this is important. Because sometimes the books we're reading are kind of like dense, like the Blithedale Romance is sort of not, it's dense in a kind of a way that's, it was written almost 200 years ago. So like the language is a little, you're kind of unpacking that in the story. But I feel like writing notes in it helps. And to be honest, for the Once and Future King, I need to restart that book. So,
See, and I've been
that, I
done with
don't
that
think that's, I think
before.
that you can actually get some benefit from that. Like, if you have to restart something, you might see the part you read like fresh and new, and you probably should actually, it should go like faster and maybe just kickstart the whole process again, like almost like starting the car. So that would be my take on that. But
And sometimes you see stuff you want to see if you kind of know what's coming, you'll see more stuff.
and then read in bigger chunks, maybe too. Because
Well,
the problem I get in sometimes is if I read a book in too many spurts of just like I feel like I do the book a disservice.
and sometimes a deadline can help.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, we're gonna do Blithedale next week. It's like, okay, well, I'm gonna have to be done with it.
Yeah.
And I've been done with Once and Future King for a while, and I'm probably not gonna read the whole thing again, but I will revisit some stuff. I'll revisit my notes and I'll kind of let some stuff sink
See,
in.
this
So, yeah.
also helps because now I feel guilty because Matt's finished it, and
Yeah, it's kind of subtle psychology you have to use too.
the
So,
reverse happened. I had Drive Your Plow done a couple months before we did that episode, so works in both ways. But yeah, there's no, I don't think there's a set way we handle the huge amount of books. I got Slow Horses on my desk here right now as we're recording. I know I want to start that this week so I can get that, you know,
I think that'll be a quick one.
in my brain and kind of get engaged. And yeah, I have a feeling that will be a quicker read than some of the other books we're reading right now. So good question though.
Good question. The she's done another question that's kind of about I guess a Twitter beef, and I'm not ignoring it, but I want to do some more research. And there's some other like Twitter book controversy
Okay.
things that I think will maybe address that in another episode, kind of
Okay.
as a separate segment, like book controversies. So,
Okay.
Matt, I think your dog's name is Wesley, right? What's the name of your cat?
Good question. I
Cat's
don't know that.
name is, you know that. Cat's name is Ember,
I don't
but
think I knew that.
it's spelled with a Y, EMBYR. It's my wife's cat. I inherited it. I am its, as you call it, his weird stepdad.
No,
It's finally
you're
grown
fine.
accustomed to me after like 9 years of being around me. But Ember, little black cat named
And I
Ember.
think, I don't know if people realize this, Matt and I both post stuff on Instagram. So sometimes you'll see a random dog. That's my dog, not Matt's, because Wesley is our podcast producer dog, and he's mostly on it. But sometimes I occasionally have photos, and that might be confusing. That might be a question in an upcoming mailbag. We both have access to the Instagram account, and so
Yeah, and then,
you might see a random dog. I got,
that's Peter's dog.
that's,
You can post more of your dogs and stuff.
I know I
It's,
do. I got a cat too, so yeah.
yeah, you got a cool cat. I actually don't know your cat's name either, so
Tula.
that's fair.
There you go.
Tula. No, I knew it. I just didn't. Yeah. Peter's cat's name is Tula. All right, one last question. This is a long one. We don't have to relitigate the Super Bowl, but I think Robin was just wondering. I think you said at the end of your recent podcast after the Super Bowl, you might have to give up on football and immerse yourself in heavy literature.
Yes.
That is a good strategy if you suffer a heartbreaking sports loss. Just immerse yourself in depressing Russian literature. And then she, okay, so aren't at least one of you a Chiefs fan and they won? But then I saw your tweet, "I don't care about sports anymore," showing Sutri and Life and Fate and other books. Weren't at least one of you rooting for the Eagles? I'm clueless about football and didn't watch the Super Bowl. The only sport I vaguely follow is tennis, though I enjoy you guys talk about football and baseball. Okay, so just to clear that up, there was a point, the Chiefs, I am a Chiefs fan, and when I posted that I don't care about sports anymore, the Chiefs quarterback, who is the best quarterback in the NFL, him and Aaron Rodgers are
Top five,
like the best.
but
Anyway, so he had just re-hurt his ankle, and they were losing by 10 points at halftime. And so that's when I tweeted that because it was not looking good. But we came back and won, and it was a fantastic finish and all that. But just to clear it up, I tweeted it in the depths of despair. When Mahomes went down with an ankle injury and we were down by 10.
he brought his telephone into the quiet room. I was tweeting from
I jumped
what
the
should have
gun.
been tranquility and peace. Yeah,
Don't make
that
fun of
I
Don't
no,
make fun of
I can
Dr.
see how that could be confusing as you
Oh yeah, if you see the tweet
air
later, you're like,
your mental
yeah.
anguish online.
Yeah. I tweeted it at the time, but then looking back later, she's like, oh, they
What's
won,
wrong with
which
this guy? Yeah.
So sorry, it was I jumped the
You're
gun.
also trying to probably reverse jinx the situation in some way. You're trying to get the karma in your favor, I think. If I know you, I think that's what you're trying to do. I like that. All right.
That's it for questions. How are we out on time? Do we?
We're kind of this is a, yeah, we're I think over an hour 15.
Okay.
I
Well,
think if my time is correct.
Thad didn't have a question, but he wanted me to do a kid's review of some of the books I read to my son.
Okay.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah,
We
let's end
now
on that. Yeah.
end on that. Let me see. Okay. So the two big ones that we do all the time. I should say I being read to, and
Yeah.
it's fun for me as a book dork. It's like, oh, I get to buy all these kids' books. We get a ton of books at the library. It's just, we have 100 at least, maybe more. And it's like, oh, he's obsessed with Curious George. So we have like 10 different Curious George books. The thing is, he really only likes 3 books read to him at any given time.
Okay.
And they can kind of vary, but right now there are, he likes Curious George Makes Pancakes and he likes Ooh. Curious George Goes to the Chocolate Factory. Ooh. You try to show him any of the other Curious George books and he is not interested. He'll Don't wait. Like he's like, he does this little, he shakes his head and waves his hand. He's like, no, no. And he wants Pancakes or Chocolate Factory. And he also likes this book called Put Me in the Zoo by Robert Lipshire. It looks like a Dr. Seuss book. So we have all these books. I'm excited to read them, all these new books. It's pretty fun. But the irony, I guess, is we have 3.
Yeah,
we have only 3 that are acceptable, and we read them. So I've read this Curious George Makes Pancakes. I'm not exaggerating, like 50 times over the last week. It's just...
Hey!
So... And I guess to review, it's the Curious George books, there's a pretty set pattern. You know, this is George. George is a good little monkey and always very curious. Today, George's friend, the man in the yellow hat, comes in and they go on an adventure. George's curiosity leads him to get into some mischief, but he always means well. And it always turns out okay for George at the end. He causes trouble, but his good heart leads him to do the right thing, and he gets rewarded at the end with a box of chocolates, some pancakes.
Sounds great. Good job.
You read it enough, though, and you start to realize that's the surface level, and there's actually a deeper level.
Yeah, I'm afraid of this.
I've come to the conclusion that George is part of the MK Ultra program.
Oh, no.
Nah. The man in the yellow hat is his handler, and George is being trained to, at the drop of a certain keyword, become a government assassin. So that's kind of what's going on.
Yeah.
The man in the yellow hat is kind of a stand-in for Jolly West, and Curious George is Project Monarch, MK Ultra test subject. And the house they live in is a safe house. So that's kind of the obvious. You read it enough, you start to read between the lines. You're like, okay, here's what's going on.
Okay. Yeah. So positive?
Oh, I love them. Okay. They're great. They're great. I try to give it a good reading every time around.
I like that there's only 3, though. You can't add
a... Seriously, there's, and they'll vary. We do more and they shift, but you know, for a week or two, all these kids' books, we can only read 3 over and over and over.
Gotta master it, you know.
It's good,
in his head.
It's good that he likes books too. And I'm hoping we'll be able to branch out and do some
in due time.
When he gets older, we can read them. I'm excited to read him The Hobbit. And the Narnia books and all that. You know, that'll be fun.
So. Nope. Curious George, pancakes.
Curious George. And Curious George is an assassin in waiting. But he won't remember that he's an assassin. It's kind of a brainwashing thing. Are you familiar with, have you read Chaos by Tom O'Neill, Peter?
No, I haven't.
That's one we should get. That's a good one. We should get around to that.
This is what
yeah, but that's kind of what that's about.
This is what I deal with. Just... Curious George.
Did you know Charles Manson was in the MK Ultra?
I was going to say, wasn't he? Yeah.
That's what that book's about. And it's pretty mainstream. Anyway, whatever. So what I'm saying is.
What you're saying. Man, the old hat. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that tonight has been a very fun episode. We had some disagreements, we had some book recommendations tonight. Brought in some outside books that we're keeping to ourselves. Matt had some fun facts. He has some very strong opinions on Aaron Rodgers. Did not see that coming.
Don't make fun of the dark retreat.
I'm not. Okay.
Talk to the audience.
You reviewed kids' books. Yep. And we had some great mailbag questions. So
keep the mailbag questions coming.
And there's some of those we'll kind of think about for a later episode. I like the question of good idea, bad execution. Let me think about that one. Matt, I'm going to do a quick rundown of our TBR. I know you did a post on Instagram, and it kind of made me nervous, I'll be completely honest, when I saw that tower of books in your study there, that we might be overboard.
Our TBR. Yeah, and that wasn't even Slow Horses and the short stories weren't on there.
So. We have the Blithedale romance. We have the Master and Margarita. We have A Time to Be Born. The Manticore. I have to read some essays by David Foster Wallace.
I'm going to read them with you, though.
Yes. We have Life and Fate and The Once and Future King. Those are seasonal books. Those are, we haven't forgotten about those, but if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you have heard those book titles for probably the last year. Short story-wise, February, we're reading The Lottery by Shirley Jackson, The Storm by Kate Chopin, and Honeysuckle Cottage by P.G. Wodehouse. Correct?
Yeah. And can I tell you?
Yes.
So I discovered, when you said Kate Chopin and I agreed to it, I had her confused, I think, with Amy Tan.
Okay.
I was thinking of a contemporary, like, literary author. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. We'll do that. And then when I Googled it, I was like, oh, okay, I know who that is. I just didn't know it at the time.
Okay. So
you still do it. I was just confused.
All right. Okay.
And so, and I go to, I checked two of the used bookstores in town, and they all have none of the short stories, but they each have like 10 copies of The Awakening.
There you go.
So
sometimes you can get The Awakening with short stories. Just
I'll find it. You'll and find it. The Storm is actually like 4 pages, so it'll be fine.
I have it in it. That's why I nominated it, because I have a copy of it, so I can give it to you. We also have, you mentioned this, Slow Horses, which is our next book in our thriller series by Mick Herron, beginning of his own, I think, at this point, 8 or 9 book series. So that's upcoming over on our Patreon. We'll be kind of delving into baseball and baseball books over on our Patreon too, upcoming spring and summer. So if you want to support us and get more content from us, head over to our Patreon. It doesn't cost a lot of money to support us over there and get extra podcast episodes, little things I write about my library book adventures. So head
and
on
voting over. Rights voting rights on what we read.
Yeah, you get a pick. You vote.
Yeah.
Listen to your suggestions, and and then I think we kind of have some unofficial books that we're kind of wanting to read too. Sutri by Cormac McCarthy is on that list.
Yeah, Sutri's on the list. We need it.
That's a lot of books, but a lot of interesting books, a lot of different kind of authors there. So I don't think we'll be bored, so to speak.
No.
Right now,
not plenty to do. We'll get it knocked down. I'm done with Blithedale. Like we'll churn out good content too.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Don't worry. We got it undercover.
And if you run into the same problem I ran into, not being able to find the Kate Chopin short stories, you can always go to, if you are in the Seattle or
Sacramento,
Seattle area.
Oh,
go to Collins Books.
Collins Books. Second,
they have been around since 1969. One of the only rare bookshops left in Seattle. They're also growing fast. They specialize in scholarly and academic books, so they do have a little bit of everything. So it is in Northeast Seattle. Walk-in customers get 50% off of all books priced under $30. They have over 20,000 qualifying titles, so it's actually a good deal. Half off.
There you go. So that's Collins Books in Seattle and
Books in Seattle.
Time-tested books in Sacramento.
Yeah.
So we got your Pacific Northwest independent bookstores covered on tonight's episode. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to wrap up tonight. Matt, as always, it's been fun. Listeners, send in your questions, because there's nothing more than we like to... I think they cause, disagreements and conversations. So
But a mailbag episode.
Keep those questions coming. Yeah. So we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.